Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Modern Day Debate. Tonight's topic, secular humanism versus Islamic ethics. We got Mark and Hussein tonight going to debate this topic, and Mark is going to start first. Mark, the floor is all yours.
Thank you very much, Justin. I'll just share my screen. Just tell me when we are ready to go.
Yep, one sec. I lost my share screen button. And it is...
It's got to be there somewhere.
Yep, live screen share. There it is. It's all yours, Mark.
Fantastic. Cheers. Thank you so much, Justin. Thanks for moderating, and thanks to Hussein for being here, and thank you for joining me. Today, I'm going to be looking at secular humanism, comparing it with Islamic ethics. Secular humanism is generally an ethical system. It's great to be here. So first off, what's secular humanism? Well, humanist values have been around for a long time. It can be found in ancient Greek philosophy and pre-Socratic philosophers. They're a Western philosopher's attempt to explain the world in terms of human reason and natural law without relying on myth, tradition, religion, or any gods. Protagoras lived in Athens about 440 BC, put forward some fundamental humanist ideas, and only fragments survive, but Epicurus also touched on what would be the foundations of humanism. Morality and understanding of the world without appeal to any kind of supernatural or God-based belief. There's elements of humanism all throughout the Enlightenment as well, when it was particularly developed upon. It's a philosophy and a belief system that maintains that morals and ethics are possible by understanding humanity's place in the natural world and not derived from dogma handed down by any religious institution or belief in a deity. A rejection is made by secular humanism that people are inherently good or evil, and evaluates what is good or bad by studying the effect our actions have on society and the rest of humanity. Although there's several schools of thoughts regarding humanism, these are the core principles of rights and moral codes that humanists all embrace. I think Nelson Mandela expressed humanism boiled down to, "I am who I am because you are who you are." The principles of secular humanism were summarized in the Amsterdam Declaration, which outlined general principles. We have to accept that morality is inherent to the human condition. We affirm the worth and dignity of the individual and the right of every human to the greatest possible freedom and the fullest possible development compatible with the rights of others. We hold that personal liberty must be combined with a responsibility to society. We recognize that we are part of nature and accept our responsibility for the impact we have on the natural world. We're convinced that the solutions to the world's problems lie in reason, human reason and action. We believe that individual joy and fulfillment that harms no other is perfectly fine. We treasure artistic creativity, imagination, transforming power of art. We believe that the commitment to the human well-being is ageless or without end. We don't seek to impose our views on anybody else, however. We are committed to presenting a way to live that for the betterment of all without making it compulsory. Modern humanism is a culmination of long traditions of meaning and ethic, the source of inspiration for many great thinkers, artists, humanitarians, and it's interwoven with the rise of science. The first humanist manifesto really gave science carte blanche, but it was rewritten in number two, because science has to be tempered with the outcomes that comes with it. Good science is helpful, bad science is incredibly destructive. And the first manifesto written in 1933 was before some of the atrocities of World War II that made us review what we thought about the way science has in our world. So humanists don't maintain that we don't need anything other than ourselves and our rationality to apply ethics. It rejects superstition, wishful thinking, and the understanding we have the right to change or attempt to change people by force. It will never seek to oppose ourselves and authority on the world. If we wish people to acknowledge our beliefs, we have to acknowledge others. In this way, secular humanism is compatible with any ideology or religion which seeks the greater betterment of human and society. This well-being or greatest happiness is called utilitarianism, in which the flourishing of society is the goal or the utility that we seek and is compatible with anybody else that seeks that same utility. Humanism doesn't claim any absolute authority. It doesn't lay down dictates. It makes no inherent moral superiority. And rather, it uses consequentialism or judges by the consequences those ethical actions have on other humans and on human society in general. It's flexible, acknowledges that knowledge is an ongoing process, and it's compatible with anything that promotes human well-being. Now, Islam, according to the traditional account, Muhammad sort of received what considered to be divine revelation in 610 CE. It basically means submission to the one God, Allah, with the expectation of imminent last judgment, for where with each of the promise of either paradise or seven hells for all of humanity. It does mean to submit to Allah's will. And what does Allah want for humanity? That can vary from person to person. It's the interpretation of man that we have to understand the will of this God. There's no direct dictates from a God, and instead they all argue over what a God wants. There's no consistent goal for Islam except God's will, and no one to clarify what that will is, except for interpretation of men and women, who interpretation quite often coincides with what they want. So these are some descriptions from some scholars. And while I think there is some merit to Muslim intentions and ethics, there's a problem here. So much of the ethical positions are based upon a knowledge of God or a relationship with God that people, different people interpret in vastly different ways. Akhlaq is always also reliant on the reality of hereafter, which is a problem as the reality cannot be demonstrated to anybody. So if Muslim akhlaq is provided, is defined as good habits, then what are they? It's basically something called virtue ethics. It seeks to promote characteristics or virtues that are supposed to be followed. It seems like a good idea, but quickly, when faced with reality, it runs into problems. Say, take an example of a possible domestic abuse, for example. Following these virtue ethics, one should bravely confront the situation. However, the police tell the public over and over not to do this, as it can cause escalation out of control. The humanist would judge based upon the consequences of the situation and realize that sometimes discretion is the better part of valor, and perhaps heroic idiocy may lead to a worse outcome for everybody concerned. This is just one example of where virtue ethics are rigid and inflexible, leading to poor outcomes, as its followers do not shape their ethical decisions to the situation. Rather, they just display the virtues that have been commanded of them. There's no getting away from Quran being the source of ethical instructions. It claims to be the ultimate source of knowledge for both moral and ethical considerations and provides guidance to those who have submitted to Allah's will. Look at Quran 3:134 on the bottom there. As the consequences are good if you spend freely when in poverty or adversity, as the Quran says. The next is even worse. Should we pardon all men? Should we pardon Jeffrey Dahmer? The last part is promising a reward for taking the actions described in the Quran. And it raises the questions of, are you being ethical if you need a reward? Is that even ethical at all? There's many verses in the Quran that have this kind of transactionary promise, it has reward for the right action. Let's look at the backbone of ethics, which is basically plagiarized from the Ten Commandments. As you can see, it does not outlaw killing. It says legal killing is perfectly fine. So this allows actions that have led to honor killings and executions in nations in the Middle East, like Arab Emirates, which practiced stoning up until 2020, usually as a default punishment for adultery. One of the main tenets is fulfilling a covenant with Allah and tells people not to follow any other way, as Islam is the only way to follow. This is why apostates in Muslim society have to fear for their lives, as well as death for apostates is a legal killing in some places. There's nothing unethical about that, according to the Quran. Here we see the implementation of ethics into punishments for people that go against the submission to Allah. mutilation, crucifixion, whipping, horrendous punishments that are banned under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. None of these barbaric actions violate any of the virtue ethics that Islam lays down. And while back in the 7th century, warring Arab tribes, it made probably sense to do this, but now we need to update our ethics and get results and provide more humane responses to transgressions. Some people make mistakes that should not benefit them, render them bereft of hands for the rest of their lives. Sometimes people are convicted unjustly. I also point out the last one prevents any defense from a person who is to receive lashes, which is completely antithetical to our modern concept of justice, where the accused always has the right to face their charges. Think about if you didn't have the right to face your accuser and were just convicted ad hoc. It would be a terrible situation. So in conclusion, secular humanism is a very flexible and forward-thinking ethical system. It bases things upon their consequences, on how they turn out, and is constantly improving itself. While, unfortunately, Islamic ethics, while it does have some virtues, it's bound by shackles to the original dogma that produced it. There are key tenets in the Quran that it cannot go against, and therefore it cannot adapt itself to the future. A few things we can sort of put into practice is looking to the future and say, how will this ethical system make ethical judgments on future technologies, asteroid mining or cloning or any of these things, while a secular humanist can just implement consequentialism and utilitarianism, these ideas of what's the outcome, is it of the greatest good for humanity? Islamic ethics cannot do this, because the book does not cover, and the virtue ethics doesn't cover, a way to move forward with it. So this is why I think that secular humanist ethics are superior to Islamic ethics. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mark. So for all of you who are just joining us, thank you so much for coming out to watch Modern Day Debate tonight. We have secular humanism versus Islamic ethics. We're about to start our second opener with Hussan. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button, everybody. And Hussan, the floor is yours for the next 10 minutes.
Thanks. thanks, Mark, for being here. Always a pleasure to see you. Bismillah. Today, I'd like to set out to show that Islamic ethical values are the middle and true road insofar they correlate and resonate with the human condition or human spirit. Obviously, I think atheists would probably disagree with that, but this is something we would call the fitra, and atheist frameworks, or I should say in this case, secular humanisms, offers only a slice of the truth, and actually sometimes things like consequentialism or utilitarianism or consent-based morality would actually lead to weird and interesting conclusions. So for example, like incest is generally viewed as wrong. However, most people, for example, don't even need to argue against it. They just intuitively know that it's wrong. Based on this, it's basically like an axiom shared throughout all societies. Islam affirms this through God's command, as well as essentially our initial disgust. It's a response from our intuitive brain. However, people who like to hyper-analyze and think in a vacuum would say that actually there's no negative outcomes on incest if they never produce a child, and therefore it's actually morally good, because two people consenting as adults agreeing to have incest is okay. And we have actually people who've been on MDD who are atheists, such as Ravan and Harris Sultan, actually agreeing to that. So you have other numerous atheists who agree to cannibalism, bestiality, and other things, which, under utilitarianism, you can definitely argue for. But based off our intuitive brain or intuitive thinking, we would just know it's disgusting and reject it automatically. Most healthy relationships and societies are built upon these intuitive and axiomatic values throughout all cultures. Islam preserves these unlike atheism. So Mark would say we should care about human flourishing, but under a world with no God, why should I? So there's a whole form of ethics under existentialism which literally talks about that, So some versions of human secularism basically just boils down to Jean-Paul Sartre's, like, you can do what you want as long as, you know, it doesn't harm this vague principle of the harm principle. And there's obviously been issues on that. Most ethical theories have pros and cons within them. However, Islam does have divine theory, which are just things that, like, you know, they're good or bad, period. There's intuitive thinking in that. There's virtue ethics, like Mark highlighted. And there is actually a form of utilitarianism or consequentialism involved in Islamic thinking, but intentions do matter. So it kind of encompasses the whole way to be an ethical person, where secular humanism simply only relies on consequences, which, as we'll see, is a huge flaw in the ideology or ethical theory. So much of the atheist sphere likes to display Islamic thought and ethical values in a negative light, only highlighting what they deem as problematic, despite ignoring their own ethical faults or in worldviews. And then Mark's been a little bit more fair on this, I think. So I love talking to him. However, once God is removed, atheists do ignore the ramifications of their choice, mainly existentialism. And I'm going to try and go into that and why secular humanism just fails as an ideology. and there's a Quranic thing on this, which states, "Have you seen, O prophet, those who've taken their own desires as their God?" And this comes to the world where we're at now. Under modern secularism, people are mostly lost and freely following their whims and conjecture of the time. You can see this within certain subsections, for example, of leftists who actively, like, disdain their own grandparents. So he did mention, for example, how secular humanism may be positive because of progressive elements. But the irony is that Mark could be seen himself as an immoral actor 10 years from now, hell, even 5 months from now, depending on what he says. So it's actually, like, a very flawed system of thinking. Liberalism, secularism, and utilitarianism is like the unholy trinity to me, with the funny conclusions that I've highlighted before, and the have led to many downfalls of societies as well as moral rot. If you contrast this with the Islamic world, there is a consensus and a way to behave, even among Shia and Sunni differences. And the Sharia involves multiple aspects of life on how you treat your spouse, duties owed to your spouse, duties to parents, to children, to country, to fellow humans, to Muslims and non-Muslims. It's an all-encompassing ideology. Many people, like when he was mentioning honor killings, like, that's not allowed in Islam. I mean, literally, Muhammad, peace be upon him, got rid of people burying their daughters, which is like a form of honor killing. I've kind of lost where I was at, but yeah, like, we can start the opening dialogue.
All right. So before we get into our open dialogue, I just want to once again thank everyone for coming out to Modern Day Debate. If you haven't hit like or subscribe yet, please do so right now. Modern Day Debate is an open platform where we encourage anybody to come and defend their positions, whether those topics being science, religion, politics. And if any of you guys right now in the audience are thinking, I can do that, then go into the community tab of this channel. There is an email address there for Modern Day Debate. Send James an email. That's right. It's still James's channel. James is here. He's always watching us. And let him know what topics you think you can defend confidently. And maybe we'll get you on stage someday. And with that, if you guys don't have your super chats going yet, feel free to get those started. And as I said, it no less, we get one. So the pile is beginning. Open discussion. We got 50 minutes on the clock, and I will leave it to you, gentlemen. Have fun.
So, Mark. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Interrupted already.
It's so bad. So what I want to touch on first is your first opening thing was you said a true road kind of thing. Like, I want to talk about meta-ethics. So what is the sort of above the goal of Islamic ethics in your mind? What is the... Oh. So meta-ethics is sort of talking about where the ethics are heading or sort of one level up. Rather than ethical implementation. Like when you say the true road, what do you think it is, and why does it disagree with a lot of other people's ideas of what it should be?
I don't think that, how do I explain it? There are ethical people who I could say are like not Muslim or not religious even. But the point is, so the thing would be this, it would be in a way the same thing, right? So you're trying to develop God consciousness as well as displaying good character. So like you mentioned that essentially it's inward reflection and it's how to be emblematic of like an Islamic virtue, right? So there is going to be obviously, like I said, like intentions and utilitarianism a bit, but it is mostly focusing on developing good character. So whether you're an atheist or not, someone who strives to be ethical would have to develop that character. And through that, they have to ask themselves like, okay, well, what is good character? Like, what are good virtues? Like, how do you behave? Stuff like that. So I'm not necessarily saying it's only regulated to religion. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, it's okay. I mean, I understand what you mean by sort of saying that, you know, some parts of it incorporate utilitarianism, but what is the utility you're looking for?
So there's going to be things like leaders who have made decisions that they're making decisions on what would most benefit the ummah or the people within their boundaries. So for example, even people who are dhimmis are paying like the jizya. So they're under Islamic protection. So there has to be things that take into consideration the entire country. So you have to have like a bit of utility. So Ibn Tamir had some writings on that where he's basically talking about how to deal with the Mongols who they claim to be Muslim, but are maybe not doing like the most Islamic things. And then even like Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he like, for example, first started preaching, it's not like he went right away to like banning alcohol. For example, it's a process, right? So you're shedding your layers of sin and you're developing this good character and this faith in God. And like you said, submitting to God after that. And then after that, okay, you know, I can get rid of alcohol. I can get rid of all these other sins. Does that make sense?
Kind of, but sort of. So when you're talking about utilitarianism, you're really looking at some form of utility that you're looking to promote, or some sort of goal that you're trying to get about. Like, for instance, the utilitarianism of secular humanism usually has the greatest happiness principle, or, you know, human well-being of both individuals and societies is the utility that you're after. And you,
sure, we could argue then it's like
that. The problem that I see happening is that your utility seems to be these virtues that may or may not lead to the best outcomes. So if you're just sort of saying, hey, you look to sort of a negative utility, reduce sin, I'm wondering how that translates into what does that translate into when you reduce that sin? Because it doesn't seem to lead to some of the best outcomes in most of these Muslim countries.
Sure. So something I could contrast this, for example, and that I wanted to bring up is like when we originally had this topic, we're kind of contrasting, right? So Islamic societies are like promoting marriage more so, but obviously like to the detriment at like than GDP, right? But overall, like when polled, they actually have more higher life satisfaction. So it's kind of like, are you picking your poison? You're picking your poison in a sense, but a empty, vacuous, like secular state where basically I think you're just maximizing autonomy and individualism, basically liberalism. You may think you're doing good, but in reality, you're actually maximizing like horrible choices. So like people could have the choice, right? Or the freedom to commit suicide, but most people just intuitively would know that that's not a good thing to achieve, right? But you're saying, oh, well, I should have the freedom to do it. And I want to maximize my utility and my independence or freedom, right? It's just basically a conflict of values. So Islamic values would be like, you know, things like social cohesion, marriage, and, you know, the good of all people, you know, being closeness to God, at peace, things like that. Which, well, obviously...
I don't have a problem with that necessarily, but it seems to be consigned to only Muslim societies. Sort of, so peace and social cohesion don't seem to be a worldwide thing. It seems to be, well, you're really worried about Muslims and nobody else.
I'm not saying that. For example, I live in the West, right? I would say that I don't personally, for example, agree with France's policy of banning the hijab, but I do understand what they're trying to do is promote social cohesion. Right. They're trying to make Muslims and immigrants basically be French. So here's the irony, right? So they're saying they're basically themselves would call themselves a secular humanist, right? Or a secular nation. And to them, you can be religious so far as in meaning you can pray at home, right? But you can't really be religious or Muslim in public. You have to be French in public, per se, right? So their tolerance ends, there, right? So, I do understand what they're doing.
Nation, huh? I'm glad that you sort of reviewed your statement that they're a secular humanist because they're not.
They're a secular liberal nation. I was going to ask you about this. So, when we're talking about secular humanism, people have different definitions of secular humanism. In a sense that, for example, Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins would say that they're secular humanists. But they, for example, argued that, the democratic mission or democratizing the Middle East and invading them is actually good. And then you have other French philosophers who argued the same, that we need to save Muslim women from Muslim men and then invade them to give them liberalism and freedom, for example. Now, some of these people did claim to be secular humanists. Obviously, I think you would disagree with their conclusions. But here's the thing. In a world where they were successful, right? Let's say they were successful, right? And we only care about the consequences and final outcome, right? It wouldn't matter that French slaughtered the millions and millions of Algerians and Moroccans, because if they were no longer Muslim and secular and like a secular humanist country, for example, you could argue then under consequentialism that was actually justified. So
I think you've sort of really misquoted Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins, because I don't think they thought that the method that was done in order to, say, stop Saddam Hussein, for instance, was a particularly a good one. I think that the methodology, the method that they used was absolutely terrible. Whether it was a good thing to remove someone from power, it may very well be if done through, say, popular uprising or supporting people that were laboring under his, horrible rule. But I don't think anyone would say, hey, that was a great way that America did it kind of thing. No, absolutely not. It resulted in the deaths of over a million Iraqis. That's absolutely horrendous. I'm not sure that they would agree with you on, that was a good thing. But they may say, hey, there's certain atrocities out there that we have to address. In the Middle East particularly, like I said, stoning was completely legal. Stoning was completely legal up until 2020. That's when they stopped the practice of stoning adulterers to death. I mean, you're really looking at a barbaric and medieval thing. And I think we've had this conversation before. Sort of cutting people's hands off for stealing is not something that we really should accept in modern society. I don't know why you would sort of think that that would be helpful to either A, social cohesion, or B, any kind of peace and well-being of anybody.
So this is something I wanted to talk about too. So when you're talking about it, so some social secular humanists, they talk about we can use empiricism, right, to determine morality in a sense, right? So in
not currently. No, not directly. So empiricism So empiricism is a hallmark of science, and we're saying we can use science, but the empiricism isn't the only thing in science. It uses a specific methodology to come out with sort of the best models we can. So we do promote science as the best way to interpret whether our models of societies are working or not working, sure, but we don't say, but, hey, we just use empiricism.
Yeah, so, but implicit or the implication with what you're saying is someone has to pick the criterion of what that society is producing is good or bad. So when you have a Western lens or a liberal lens, you can say that, oh, these Middle Eastern societies are producing actually negative things by chopping hands. And then I could say, for example, that actually, if you look at it within a few generations, the theft rate has gone significantly down. And now people leave their doors unlocked. People feel very secure with leaving their belongings. So maybe that harsh punishment, like the Quran quote says, you may dislike it. You may feel empathy for the person you're having to do this to, but that is the requirement of a good ruler. They're making this decision that in the down the road, the consequences may be good. So for example,
you support mutilation of, say, you know, somebody pickpockets, say an 18-year-old pickpockets, you would support cutting their hands off in order to, you know, sort of that would be something you would advocate for as a crime.
Islam does allow mercy. So I'm not saying you would be chopping off all their hands, but yeah, as a rule,
just some hands. Yeah.
As a rule. Yeah. And why is that a problem? So for example, like El
Salvador. Why is that a problem?
Right? So I'm trying to explain. So El Salvador, right? El Salvador, they're rounding up all the people who are being gang members. Right. And so currently he's rounding them all up. Right. And he's throwing them in prison. So now he's being accused by Western liberals and secular people as a fascist. Okay, but the real world implication of his harsh action has been that it's reduced crime, and then now the country can actually develop. So, yeah, like, no one's going to invest in an area where there's crime.
I want to get to your thing of what the problem is. The problem is that innocent people may be having their hands cut off when they're in, you know, sort of falsely convicted. We have not yet found a way to get 100%, you know, certainty with any kind of crime. People are convicted of being murderers all the time that are innocent on death row. So how would you feel if you were the innocent one having your hands cut off because somebody thought you were stealing when you weren't stealing? Would that be an ethical thing at that point for you to be sort of handless for the rest of your life?
No, but false accusations are like punishable as well. Ironically, they're not punished. Ironically, they're not punishable under liberal countries. You know, you can make false accusations.
What are they punishable with?
It depends on like the school of thought, but I read that some people who have made false accusations,
for example, in the
adultery one, instead of the woman getting lashed who's being accused, or the man, it could be either, by the way, the person who made the false accusation would be lashed.
And so he doesn't even get a chance to defend himself. Okay, so you said no to that thing of, like, would it be ethical to chop your hands off if you were innocent? You said no. The problem there is that if you're falsely convicted, you're not punishing the person making the accusation. With the punishment in the Quran is lashes, I believe it's 80 lashes. So you're not being punished for making the accusation because you've been convicted. And you said no, which means that in your system and your perspective, it's ethical if it happens to somebody else, but it's not ethical if it happens to you.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Hussein, let me finish.
If I did commit the crime, then it's ethical. It would be ethical.
That is not the case. That is not the case. I said unjustly convicted. Now you're
changing. I understand. But I'm saying, so what you're saying is, so let's flip the script, okay? If you're saying, so, okay, right now there's 10 years, okay, for like stealing something, right? Okay. US law or whatever. Okay. If you were unjustly thrown into jail for those 10 years, then of course the person, it would be wrong because the person falsely accused you, right? Okay, yeah, we both agree. So I don't understand the problem, but that doesn't make the system of those 10 years.
Because you didn't let me finish.
Just like the chopping of the hands is not unjust.
You didn't let me finish. Because what is ethical at that point is releasing the person from jail, remedying the situation, and compensating them for their loss. But you can't do that when you've chopped somebody's hands off. You can't remedy the situation when you've cut somebody's hands off. It is permanent. Unless you know a way 10 years down the track to sew those hands back on, or maybe a miracle from Allah could heal them, that would be great. But you can't remedy that situation. And that is what makes it unethical. Because if I was unjustly convicted and thrown in prison after 10 years, I could say, hey, that was ethical because there is a way for the state to remedy me for that incorrect prosecution. But there is no way for the Islamic State, and it doesn't seem interested in remedying justice for those who have been incorrectly convicted. There seems to be a faith position of, well, they're convicted, it's Allah's will, they lose their hands.
So you know that the hand chopping thing doesn't happen unless there's like sufficient evidence, right? Like if you're just accused, like there's laws and protocols on how these things go. So it's not like, again, that they're just, you're like making a straw man of it where they're just chopping off everyone's hand. If you
They're always right. They're always right, are they? You're claiming they're always
Because to enact what these punishments are called are hadud punishments. So even for example, like the one for cheating and adultery, like you need a basically four witnesses. Okay, how are you ever gonna get that? The point is basically you'd have to be fornicating in the street. The only way I could actually accuse you of doing it, Mark, is like doing it in the street. So again, it's not like what you're saying.
Yeah. So I don't even know. Like you're sort of suggesting that people wouldn't lie to cover up for their friends or do any of this stuff. That it's never, justice has never gone awry in Islamic society, kind of thing, which is just a
I never
naive statement to make. No, you only said it's only when it's absolutely certain that there's a lot of people where absolutely certain they're guilty that are not in fact guilty. Just because Islamic ethics doesn't go back,
well, Mark, do you have any?
To remedy it doesn't mean they haven't convicted people unjustly.
So do you have any punishments? This is a big conflict we had where I'm for restrictions of people. And apparently you're like never for restriction.
You're for mutilation of people.
Yeah, if they commit crimes, just don't commit a crime.
That's not the criteria for being mutilated. The criteria for being mutilated is being convicted of a crime.
Yes,
because
you have due
process. Tell for certain because we can't tell for certain whether someone has or has not committed a crime. There is no foolproof 100%.
Yeah, so why never? We should never punish anyone, Mark. We should never punish anyone in any society.
We can never know
100%.
I already explained that, but we should keep punishments to ones that we can rectify and not mutilating and destroying people's bodies that we can't rectify if we found out we made a mistake. Just because Islamic ethics doesn't admit mistakes doesn't mean it doesn't make them.
No, Muslims readily admit. There's a whole saying on this that Islam.
Oh, so they do admit when they do.
Yeah, we do. What do you mean? So the whole point is Muslims say, oh, we're not perfect, but Islam is perfect. That's the whole point of view. So
what does that even mean?
You can make mistakes. Yeah, so human beings can mistakes.
Well, your ethical standards are being taken from Islam. So if Islam's not perfect, there's no.
I never said Islam's not perfect. You misheard me. You misheard me, Mark. I said Islam is perfect. Human beings are not. So, for example, the rule makes sense. There is consensus. So, for example, you made it seem like Muslims don't have a consensus, but they do, and there is a consensus, and they all agree to this. Okay. The point is, though, is that the rules make sense because human beings, and funny enough, an existentialist philosopher, Nietzsche, wrote about this. They need harsh punishments and in order to use coercive methods to make people act correctly and honor rules.
Was Nietzsche a secular humanist?
No, but Jean-Paul Sartre was, and
no,
he said
whatever
you want. So,
no,
and if it comes
no,
to good conclusions,
no, he wasn't. No, he
I mean,
wasn't.
If there's a study, an empirical study, Mark, that showed chopping hands, you know, really reduce the rate of theft. Are you going to admit that it's okay to chop hands?
No.
So then you don't even believe your own
certain, excuse me. Yeah, you asked me a question. Excuse me. So I think that there's certain inalienable rights that all humans have, and one is bodily autonomy. We don't have to solve crime by chopping off hands. We can lock people up and they can't commit the crimes either.
You're
and the problem with chopping people's hands off is that when you do so, they no longer can find gainful employment. They are a drain on the society. They can't, like, they usually will end up running scams or begging or any of these things because they can't be productive members of society anymore. And I love that you're sort of pointing to a hypothetical study that doesn't exist that says chopping off hands reduces the crime rate, because you have no such study. And what we have noticed from corporal and capital punishment is that what we have noticed from those things is they don't lower crime rates. They're completely ineffective. What works is rehabilitative justice. As you can see in the nations that are most closely aligned to secular humanist values, like the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Sweden, you know, these Netherlands, these type of countries, they have the best outcomes and they don't practice these horrific things. Can you get me that study?
Yeah, I can get studies that show that Islamic countries have less crime. So
wait. So that does not mean that the cause of it is chopping off hands, does it?
I'm saying but they have harsher punishments than, say, America. Like, and even in America, you can see that there's like certain among states, there's differences. So states that may have like harsher crime laws in those counties typically can have lower crime. So where like liberal cities, obviously you can try and explain it away by, you know, socioeconomic factors and, you know, population densities and stuff like that. So,
there's other things. So correlation does not equal causation. That's a mistake. So if you're sort of saying, hey, there's less crime in these countries, I'd love to see a study of that, that says there's less crime than, say, you know, the Norwegian countries, the Scandinavian countries, I'm sorry, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, you know, these countries that practice more humanist ways of approaching things. Secondly, you know, you were talking specifically about chopping off hands, does it? And you sort of said, if there was a study, we'll get the study. Go get it.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. I just want to test your commitment to empiricism. So for example, right, you mentioned in your definition of secular humanism, you talked about like humans strive to be rational. You also talked about how like you wanted to go above maybe things like tribalism. But the irony is that there's studies that show that actually like human beings are just innately very tribal and predisposed to be tribal. And then there's also studies that show that humans aren't actually as rational and we just make post hoc rationalization after making decisions.
Yes. So when you're talking about innate attributes of humans, you're kind of talking about the evolutionary traits that we possess. Humans are innately aggressive as well. It doesn't mean that those are things we should laud or try to emulate or implement in our societies. We're aware of the downfalls and pitfalls of the human origin, and we don't think that it's worth sort of, you know, lauding these values. A lot of the things that constitute modern society is humans overcoming these traits, not promoting them. So I don't know why you would think that. And I also want to bring up
moral my whole intuition. Point was that Islam is more congruent with humans and it basic like functions, right? So if we're saying, you know, this is how human beings behave,
I'll make an absolute concession to you. Islam and the Quran are more congruent with how 7th century primitive warring Arab tribes behaved than modern society. I'll make that absolute concession. I completely believe you.
Okay. So you're just prescribing. So you're saying, oh, we're in this this modern time, we can act this certain way. And in reality, you're just taking what we have now currently for granted. And you're not actually recognizing how human beings truly are. So again, this is why secular humanism is false. It basically makes a bunch of value judgments and presuppositions that don't actually exist. So something I did want to ask you about is, like, for example,
hang on. Now, ethical systems are not true or false. They're a way of doing something. That's a misapplication. Facts are true or false. You know, it's just a way of implementing things with a focus on the consequences and human rights in general. You've got to somehow explain why these Arab countries are so backwards and not progressing very well as far as human rights are concerned.
So again, you're only focusing on GDP and human rights. So you're saying human rights is the highest value, and then therefore they're failing. Okay, but if you look at other criteria, like life satisfaction, marriage rates, not divorce rates, less rates of infidelity, these things, then they're succeeding. Again, most statistics are biased in a sense. Like, if I choose a bunch of subjective values, right? If in a world without God, everything is subjective. And if I'm choosing these subjective values, then those societies are better. If I'm choosing another set of subjective values, then I could say Russia is better than America. It is all based off picking whatever value you think is the highest.
Yeah, so, but you've basically got, we can measure life satisfaction, but in those countries, there may be entirely uneven distributions of satisfaction. I mean, you've got a system where women are treated way less fairly than men are. And while they're held up under the Islamic virtues, they certainly are bereft of a lot of choices where it comes to a lot of different things. In fact, the Quran says that a woman that disobeys a man can be beaten. Do you deny that?
No. So, okay. Most of So Islamic rules or Sharia is putting restrictions on people. So, for example, many women, right, are quick to anger and impulsive, right? So if they get angry, and I'm not saying that this is okay. I'm not saying this is okay, Mark. Just don't straw man me. All right. So men can, for example, get angry and they'll hit their wife. Okay. But in the application of Sharia, it says, oh, you can't do that. You can't do this in anger. You have to deny them in bed. You have to speak with them. And then on the last occasion, can you lightly hit them with what is called like a mushawak, which is basically like a little twig, and you're just displaying your fact that you're upset, you know, and that they're being unruly. And then in reality, you can just divorce them if they're obviously being too unruly, right? So, people so can marriages cannot work out.
Why doesn't the woman get that to do that to the man if they're being unruly?
Women are operating a different way. So like women withhold sex. Women, you know, don't do things for men. Like, women can manipulate men in other ways. Like, they both do things. Both genders operate in different ways.
Incredibly unhealthy. That sounds incredibly unhealthy and just terrible. Yeah. So this kind of brutal totalitarian control over people.
Where you're
basically saying, well, if you do this, I'm going to punish you in this way, but if I do the same thing, I don't have it applied to me. I'm a man, I have a different set of standards, but I don't get this kind of thing applied to me. Here's the problem with Islam.
That's not
just
how it works.
Because
there's duties for men too.
You have
there's
been doing this since the 7th century doesn't mean it's a good idea to do.
So,
and I've yet to see any study produced at all that says that there's less crime in these countries, and that cutting people's hands off reduces the crime rate. I mean, you basically said, if I could produce it.
Yeah, I'll look into it. I mean, I had it in another debate with the one with Aaron Raw, but, you know, I don't have it obviously pulled up now. So, So I have a quick question on that. So you're talking about studies, right? And you're putting a lot of emphasis on them. If there were studies that showed, for example, like people have discussed with, so because you never answer this, like, say for example, like, is incest okay, morally okay to you? If your only virtue is freedom and consent, you would have to say yes.
So what you obviously didn't listen to my introduction, because as I really strenuously pointed out, that freedom has to be balanced with a responsibility to society. Now, we do have a responsibility to society, and every secular humanist believes that. Like, you're not talking about sort of open sort of libertarian, where you should be able to do anything you want, like some kind of anarchist libertarian. You're talking about secular humanism, where your personal freedoms, not only has it got to be balanced with others' freedoms and others' rights, it also has to be balanced with an obligation to society. And we take that very seriously.
Okay, so why would incest be breaking society? What obligation are they breaking to society?
Well, it's not healthy for...
Why? Why is it not healthy?
Well, because people that are related that produce children...
No. If they could never produce
children, why I have to...
They can always wear condoms. They can get a vasectomy. There's solutions to this. When we're progressing, why are you a bigot about incest, Mark? You should be for it.
Well, no, I'm personally not. I think that the power relationship between families can lead people to be manipulated. I think it can.
There's a brother and sister. Say brother, sister, same age, something like that.
Well, look, I think that is like it's a power imbalance. That like I also don't think that, say, a coach of an adult team and or an employer should have sexual relationships with an employee, because it's a power imbalance that leads to unhealthy consequences. It's because of that imbalance I think it is unethical. It may not be illegal, and you may be able to do it, but I think it is unethical because of the relationship those people have. So what we're talking about is how to maintain healthy relationships with those around you.
So if there's
so sometimes a healthy relationship, as in the case of people that have met, fallen in love, etc., is good for society. But when you're talking about a pre-existing relationship, sometimes it can be very unhealthy. And that is like in the case of when I work for my boss and have a relationship with them as well. That can be incredibly unhealthy.
But how does that have to do with incest?
You don't think brothers and sisters have relationships? Is there something wrong with you, Hussein?
No, they have relationships, but they shouldn't have relationships in a sexual matter. But what
I'm explaining is under
a purely quote unquote maximizing utility, maximizing freedom, they should have the autonomy to do that. It doesn't negatively impact society.
I never said my utility was freedom. When did I say that?
Okay, you said happiness, right? So if they're maximizing their
it's not. It's the greatest happiness principle, which is a bit misleading, because the person who coined it wasn't talking about just happiness. He was talking about the overall contentment of a society, the overall health and contentment of a society. And this is where people like you, they mischaracterize what the greatest happiness principle is, because they're not familiar with it. And that's okay. I get that. You're not familiar with it. Greatest happiness principle is the overall satisfaction of the country and the society, not just the happiness of one individual.
Yeah, so, okay, I would really love if they pulled, like, who's happier, Western societies where they have, like, higher increase of SSRIs now, depression, mental illness, all this stuff, or traditional cultures. I wonder who's, you know, I think it'd be a really interesting study.
If you look around the crime index, like, it is varied among Islamic countries. Like, Indonesia has a very high crime rate. Pakistan has a very high crime rate. Bangladesh has a very high crime rate. There are these countries, Turkey, Iran has quite a high crime rate. Like, your idea that, all of these Islamic countries, places like Oman and very, very strict and oppressive countries seem to have it lower, like Kuwait. But, you know, as you get up there, you find that, Afghanistan has an incredibly high crime rate.
Okay, wait, I don't believe it. You can't tell me you believe any stats from Afghanistan, right? So for example, there's a stat just recently released, right? Okay, they said countries with where it's most unsafe for women, right? And they basically picked all Muslim countries, right? Okay, the irony being is that this Brazilian couple went through all those countries, including the Taliban-led Afghanistan, and then only had an issue when they went to secular liberal India, and that's where they had an issue. I mean,
well, nice anecdotal.
It's funny because I don't know how much you can believe.
So you think it's perfectly safe for women in Afghanistan?
It could be. I'm not saying that the stats are true.
Could be. Oh, well, then.
Taking it on faith, you know. Taking it on faith. I don't know if you can believe all these stats.
I wouldn't.
You have a lot of implicit bias.
Just looking through Iraq, Afghanistan, Lebanon, Syria are right up there on criminality. So, this whole idea that, you know, that this automatically makes things more safe is absolutely, you know, terrible. Terrible.
So, Mark,
I wanted to talk about, you do think
incest is wrong then, right? Just to clarify. So your position was,
I think there is a power and relationship imbalance because of that. I think that when you have a relationship of siblings where one's older and has a power imbalance over that, I think that's wrong to abuse that kind of relationship. Yeah, okay. I think that's unethical. There might not be anything illegal about it. There might not be any wrong outcomes for the people involved. But I think that there's a lot of relationships, like the relationship between a coach and a player, for instance, in a team, that I would say, hey, that relationship is unethical. The relationship between an employer and employee, that would be unethical. There's a lot of things that one has an obvious
power dynamic over that person.
What, you don't think older and younger siblings do?
Yeah, I can't judge you. I need a study to tell me if it's empirically okay that incest is right or wrong, apparently. So.
Of course they do.
We can clip it, Mark, in 10 years. In 10 years, just so you know, you'll be a bigot because we're progressing. And, you know, you're shaming these people.
Just looking at the overall criminality score as well, it's interesting what you find at the bottom, places like Japan and Poland, South Korea.
Wait, I have a question.
Australia down here. Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Hey, I have a question on that, Mark.
Well, I did want to cover something I brought up. Hang on a sec. No. I brought up this multiple times and I wasn't allowed to continue, so I would like to touch on it. You basically went to your moral intuition as a good moral guide for what you think is right and wrong, automatically moral intuition. Why do you think that your moral intuition is accurate where it comes to things like when you try to appeal to utilitarianism? What makes you think your moral intuition is a good guide?
Because consequentialism is essentially false, because you would have to have extreme hubris to think that you can always know consequences. So, for example, a good example of this would be like, say I attempted to murder you, right? And I would never, Mark. I would never. I like you, you know? But say I did, right? And I inadvertently shot someone who was in the process of a crime. To say that only consequences matter is kind of stupid because, you know, I killed that guy who was attempting to murder someone in reality when I was attempting to murder you. Okay. No one would look at that and be like, yeah, he did a moral good because the consequence was positive. No, you'd be insane to think that. So clearly only following consequences, right, is like a false suggestion, right? So there's things like intuition, intent, values, right? So
I think intent is important. That's why we have like attempted crimes, right? Like, so nobody is saying that intent, so intention of the consequences that you're trying to produce isn't a factor. Nobody's saying that. So I'm not sure why that's where you're going to. But I'm more thinking stuff like my moral intuition would say it's horrible to cut off someone's leg, right?
People say, so the intuition is basically, funny enough, a form of like the harm principle, right? Even Daniel Hikikichi has talked about that, where he says there's a basic human intuition psychologically that harming someone is not okay unless justified. And that's the key word. So if they did do something wrong, that's why most societies practice this, right? Say someone was caught raping someone, they would hang them, or like theft or whatever. Most people punish criminals by death. So, you know, if anything, Islam is more merciful by than the standard of history. So,
basically, you're saying that the moral intuition has to be looked at in view of what are the consequences that it provides.
No, I'm saying that. I'm saying that.
Well, does your moral intuition say that it's wrong to cut off someone's leg?
No, it says if it's unjustly, no. Then it is. It is.
How do you justify it?
Because if someone commits a crime, then they deserve to be punished. And I don't know why that's problematic. Also, by the way,
saying someone commits a crime. I'm just asking you a question. Yeah. You're basically saying, hey, you can't just use your moral intuition. You've got to justify it. What are you justifying it with? What process are you justifying it with?
What process am I using to justify? I'm saying, yes. Yeah. So I'm saying, well, one, Islam says if you steal above a certain amount, then and under certain criteria.
No. You're misunderstanding.
Then your hand would be chopped off. So
look, you're not, like you're even, not even understanding me. What I'm saying is you go to do something and your moral intuition says, hey, it's wrong to do this. But you're saying it has to be justified and then you can proceed with it. Not Islam says, because that's not a process of justifying anything. That's dogma. That's just, hey, my religion says it's okay, then it's okay. How are you using, what process are you using for justifying it? Or is it just if Islam says it's okay, it's okay?
So that was my whole point when I was asking you about, do you actually think human beings are rational? So what I was saying is that, and the reason why virtue ethics is so strong in cultivating good virtue is because people cultivate good habits and then they naturally make good decisions just intuitively or reflexively, if you will. And that's why Robert Jonnock says decisions are actually made with little to no cognitive process, meaning we don't actually rationalize anything. We just do instinctively do things. And I was saying, like, is that not a problem for secular humanism?
Yeah.
So I'm saying,
just say the person didn't commit any crime, then chopping off their leg is wrong.
No, then it's immoral. Yeah, because that's the intuition.
Okay.
That all human
beings... the person I was talking about had gangrene in their leg and they just died. Congratulations.
Okay, you hid facts though.
what facts did I hide? Look, even doctors have to be
that's
trained.
Not a gotcha.
No. Even doctors have to be trained to overcome their moral intuitions because we automatically think that is wrong to do to somebody. Like, a lot of people cannot handle things like amputation and things that we have to do in emergency rooms. They have to be trained to do so because their moral intuition tells them that it's wrong to do it. Our moral intuition is not particularly accurate when it comes to what we should and should not do. Most soldiers shoot to miss, right? They will not shoot people to kill them. They will shoot to miss because our moral intuition says, I shouldn't be doing this. They have to be trained to overcome that. And I'm not saying that all soldiers are moral, but sometimes the necessary application of force can be an ethical decision, like, you know, the wars in Rwanda and things like that.
Yeah, so if a ruler in an Islamic country wants to chop off in hand, then, you know, that could be justified for the greater good. If the consequence, by the way, again, if you only care about consequences, and then within a generation or two, again, go back to the El Salvador president, it is showing that his quote unquote totalitarian method is decreasing crime. So if you only care about consequences, then he's actually doing a moral good.
But I also care about any innocent people that's been swept up, and he's absolutely unethical.
I thought you care about
them.
The
greatest. Hang on.
And the most
you
amount of people.
You have admitted that that is unethical, that people are being killed who are innocent. So how, this is the thing, your stance is it's ethical when it's not happening to you. That's your stance.
That was never my stance. I just said it would
be
a
misfortune. You don't have a problem. You seem to have a problem when it's some yourself, but you have no.
I said no. I said that's misfortune. Anyone who's accused or has something undone unjustly, and then they get so again. If someone gets accused of murder, and then they put on death row and killed, right? And it turns out they're innocent, right?
Yeah.
That is a tragedy. It is, but it doesn't make the court system or our judicial system now somehow immoral?
Okay, well, it's interesting that you bring up
it makes the individuals.
I have a few things to say about that. The death penalty is, well, number one, it's ineffective for deterring crime. I can produce lots of studies that say it is ineffective for deterring crime. Number two, the amount of people on death row is surprisingly high that should not be there in unjustly convicted people. Number three, it's absolutely humane. It usually involves a lot of pain and horrendous agony as they do die. There is no reason for the death penalty. Other countries have gotten much better results without the death penalty than America has with it. And I might add, crime rates are higher in those states with the death penalty than without it. So congratulate, you've just proved my point. There is no reason for the death penalty. I mean, I'll have a debate on this as well. I can show you lots and lots of data that says that the death penalty is useless. In fact, it's kind of, it doesn't achieve what it's supposed to achieve. And that's at the cost of human life, which secular humanists think is precious, and people should have rights. The right to live being based upon one of them that we don't seem to care about.
If you intuitively, people do recognize that people have the right to life. So, but when they commit crime, they forfeit that. That's the whole point. In a war, people are willingly engaging in a war. They understand that they can die, right? You're essentially taking something that's very normal and that people understand. Intuitively, all people understand that. Islamically, we do talk about that. Like, no one's saying, Mark, that you're not a human being and that you don't have the right to life, right? The point is when you do something that is a crime, you are forfeiting that right. That's why, there were tons of liberal philosophers who literally said, oh, if you insult the French philosophy, liberalism, all these things, then, you know, all these Algerians can die.
No. Hold on. Let me finish. That is the whole point, because you're saying if you commit a crime, you have the right to die. But I'm talking about the unjustly executed, the people that didn't commit a crime and are still executed. Like, this is the thing. You're not hearing what you're saying. You're saying, oh, but if you commit a crime, you get to be executed. These people that are being executed, yes, some of them committed crimes. Did it warrant the death penalty? Probably not, but, you know, I get what you're saying. But even that point falls flat, because there are people among them who didn't commit the crime, Hussein. And that's the whole point.
Yeah, so if we're talking about
how many innocent lives are worth putting guilty people to death? How many? How many are worth it? 1,000? 10,000? 100,000?
I mean, if you're following a purely...
No. Give me a number. Give me a number. How many innocent
idea,
lives are worth it?
Then as long as it's... You could be as long as you're at 51%, because this is, again, how stupid utilitarianism is. As long as you're at 51%, then technically it's justified.
No, because
yeah,
we have to...
That's how it works.
Human rights. No. That is not a principle of secular humanism. You're just strawmanning secular humanism. Because because you weren't listening, I'll go over it humanism. Again. We believe that humans have natural inalienable rights.
Where do they come? Humanism. Where do they come from?
They come from humans.
Wait, why?
Humans.
We're just meaningless, evolved space stuff.
Okay, that's a complete straw man.
No, it's not.
I do not believe that. The whole point there is
there's no reason to accept your proposition is true. So if we all just evolved meaninglessly and randomly, like all existentialist philosophers say,
meaninglessly? My life has meaning, and so do other people's lives. What now? It's not meaningless. What now?
Well, of course, people perceive meaning. That's why that's my whole point about why atheism.
They don't just perceive it. They have
existentialism meaning. Is wrong, but I'm just saying.
Look, don't try to apply existentialism to me when I'm not an existentialist. That's
no, my
point
is you're wrong. If you are an atheist, like you say you are, you should bite the bullet and believe in existentialism.
I don't.
Because if are just a meaningless evolved ape.
I never said it was meaningless.
No. Wait. And your choices don't matter, because the consequence.
Who said my choices don't matter?
Okay, so.
Of course my choices matter.
All right. Why do your choices matter?
because I have a life that I like to enjoy, and I want the best for not only myself but my society, because it is the calling of humans to look out for their species.
Yeah, so again,
I believe in certain things.
So secular humanism, right? So again, you're going back to, in a way, like what I asked about with tribalism, right?
No, no. Why does being an atheist make me a sort of some sort of nihilist? Why is that? I really want to know, because I've heard this before and it baffles me completely. Why is atheism suddenly nihilism in your opinion?
So in my opinion, it's the logical conclusion. So I respect Camus because he went the
Why?
Full distance of his atheism.
Why? Why?
Because it's absurd then. It's absurdism.
Why? Yeah, I'm not hearing a why. I'm just hearing a statement again and again.
Yeah, so
and
his
again.
Argument,
why?
His argument is that basically, sorry, like the prayer thing went off. So I'll have to pray after this. Okay, so basically Camus' theory is that if there's no God, there's no morality and there's no values, right? Nothing matters because of that, right? So you being moral or immoral wouldn't matter. And in fact, you're actually just making up your interest. So Jean-Paul Sartre says, yeah, exactly. We're making it up, right? So you, Mark, as an individual, are deciding what gives your life meaning, and then say Justin can decide something else, right? And you actually, because of moral relativism, have no right to say anything against him, okay? And then you get into Nietzsche, which is like good and bad, and then there's no, it's beyond morality. And then you have Camus, who says, well, actually, they're all lying. The truth is, if there is no God, life is meaningless.
Okay, because, well, I want to address all of that. Yeah, so you've got it completely wrong, and it's interesting that you're sort of saying, hey, you've got ethics, but no morality. Like you said at the start, well, atheists can have ethics, and you know, you sort of gave a bit of respect to sort of more atheistic standards of ethics, but now here you are saying that we don't have any, which is a really weird contradiction to make.
No, I've
got to finish. No, you're not interrupting me at this point.
Okay.
So moral relativism, I'm not, like, there's different types of moral relativism, and I'm a meta-ethical relativism, which means as long as we can agree on a goal to reach, in this case human well-being, there's no problem having morals in order to reach that goal. So your whole idea that, well, it's completely meaningless, it's just an assertion. Of course my life has meaning, and just because we decide on the meaning of our life doesn't mean there is no meaning. Like, you're sort of saying, well, there's nothing if you don't have some sort of objective morality, and you're just plain wrong. Laws are not objective either. They're completely subjective. But one wouldn't say there is no laws and then go out and, I don't know, be a sovereign citizen.
No,
or something.
I would say,
because
most
laws clearly, no, you are not interrupting me right now, Hussein. It's not going to happen, so forget it. You would not go out and do whatever you want against laws because you said, hey, people just made them up so they don't exist. The morals that we have are sociological in nature. They are for societies, but they do exist and they are applicable. And that does not make me a nihilist. As much as you want to say it does, it doesn't. And you are wrong.
So
sorry.
I'm not saying you're a nihilist. I'm saying that is the logical conclusion of an atheist worldview. Okay. However, many atheists can be moral. And they don't believe that. And that's why in our first debate, I said secular humanism is basically a religion. So you're replacing what should be the truth, which is absurdism. And you're replacing it with, oh, well, you know, human beings, we are special. Well, why, if we're just the same like monkeys and evolved and, you know, we only act on impulses and everything is deterministic anyways. Well, like, I don't really know, but I just believe it. And we're going to go with that. There's no reason to accept any of like the presumptions. And then I was going to ask, when you talk about we should care about our fellow human beings or human flourishing and things like that. Well, someone who is like an atheist, but more right wing, maybe like Grippy or Jeffrey Grippy or whatever his name was, he would obviously say, well, the intuitive normal thing or the truth, right, when it comes to human beings, is to only care about your tribe. So he's a white nationalist. So he's come to the conclusion, well, I should be a white nationalist. It's
Are
not that I hate anyone
right
else.
Now?
It's
Are
is
you
that
talking right. him right now?
So
I feel like I'm being leveraged, like all these people I've never even heard of, to be honest with you.
So it's all right. We've gone way over time at this point, but you guys were on a topic at one point I wanted to see resolve, and now it's shifted gears into something else.
It's fine. It's been fun.
Yeah. So, excellent debate so far. Really, really interesting. So with that, we're going to jump into our Q&A here in a moment. But first, I want to allow you gentlemen to have some final words, a closing statement, if you will. I think that's what we should call that. That's a pretty cool idea. Who would like to go first?
I'll go.
All right.
So
how much time we think we need? What, 3 minutes?
No. Yeah. Like a minute, dude. Like it's not going to be much. So
the floor is yours.
Okay, like I've said in this debate and last debate, basically human secularism doesn't really seem to have any boundaries or a way to behave or even imply like a virtues that you should. Mostly just boils down to like liberalism and maximizing freedom and happiness, which isn't actually true. You know, there's things that can deprive you of happiness, but actually make you, you know, better for it. So like marriage, if you will, in a sense, deprives you of freedom to sleep with whoever you want, but it can be a more rewarding experience in life because of it. So actually just maximizing freedom and quote unquote hedonistic pleasures is not always the pursuit of humanity or should be. Islam prefaces this and preserves this with its code of ethics and it explaining to you how to behave, how to cultivate good virtue, how to be humble and focusing on your inner self. And yeah, has rules for how you treat people. So hopefully people can see that and look into that and reflect.
All right. Thank you very much. Mark, with your closing remarks.
Yeah. So secular humanism, it doesn't just focus on outcomes. That's not the only focus. And it doesn't just focus on personal freedoms. It's kind of weird throughout this debate to hear that we focus on personal freedoms exclusively and we focus on outcomes exclusively, which is kind of incompatible with one another. In fact, there's been a lot of contradictory information coming about out of Hussein, like that we can be moral people, yet we atheists have no morals, which is a really strange thing to say. So I think it's just a misunderstanding of thinking that atheists don't have any beliefs in anything. We do have beliefs in things. I believe in social structure. I believe in social cohesion. I believe in freedom of the individual. I believe in a lot of things. And just because we don't have a God belief doesn't mean we don't have any belief. And it doesn't mean that we don't have a belief that we can live a good and productive life and pass down a better world for our descendants. Because secular humanism is forward-facing. It is basically saying the humanity to come afterwards should have a good world to live in. We believe it's our responsibility. And we believe in these things, but we don't believe in a God. So it has been described as a religion. I think that's a little bit flawed. It's not how I would define a religion. But if you mean a religion to be a set of beliefs, then perhaps you're correct that it's a religion. But I don't think that's really an accurate qualifier for it. It's interesting, some of the information we've heard. We've heard that Middle Eastern countries have better crime rates, even though upon checking the statistics, they don't. Places like Japan, places like Australia, places like the Scandinavian countries actually have better crime rates. It's interesting to hear that it's unfair if I get my hand chopped off, but it's fair if somebody else gets theirs chopped off. It's very, very odd to hear this intellectual inequality where it's fine for other people to have these things happen to me, but not fine for it to happen to me. So this complete lack of looking at consequence only applies to the consequences for others and not the consequence for yourself. You know, living the rest of your life with no hands because the government made an error. It's obviously something that's unfair if it happens to Hussein, but it's perfectly fine if it happens to somebody else. So I think we've got a lot of problems with the Islamic kind of principles here. The idea that if you're just honest and brave and all of these things, then things will just work out for the best no matter what actions you take. I think that's incredibly short-sighted. I think that that's not the way through. And even, you know, strangely enough, Hussein sort of said, well, it relies also on consequentialism and utilitarianism, and then went to say, hey, but the consequentialism is nonsense. It just seems like he wants it both ways. But I'll leave it there. Thank you for listening. And I'll hand it back over to Justin, I guess.
All right. Good times. Once again, everybody, if you haven't hit like or subscribe, feel free to do so. I'm giving them away right now. The like button is free to hit for anybody, all you want, no extra charge. Okay. Modern Day Debate hitting 181,000 subscribers, which is absolutely amazing. I mean, James does the amazing much, much better than I do. But I promise you guys that I know we all long for James to come on and talk to us and moderate debates. And I promise very, very soon he will be back in full swing. But he'll be coming back as Dr. James, which will be fantastic. With that, we'll get into our super chats, which we have lots of room for. So if anybody has any other super chats you want to add, feel free to do so. With our first super chat, Robin Webster sends $10. Oh, hey, wait a minute. Just remembered. Yep, I got glasses now, so I'll be able to read these without too much trouble for once. Here we go. The debut. All right.
You look so much smarter.
I know, right?
Smarter, my friend. Yeah, yeah.
I should have not put my finger on the lens because now it's a little smudge. Anyways, Robin Webster, Islam is intolerant of other religions and non-believers. We know since the Enlightenment that more secular nations provide a more safe and peaceful society. You are simply strawmanning humanism. Clearly they're talking to you. Hussein, did you have any comments to return?
Sure. So much like the French and British, they use what you're justifying as civilizing the savage. So secular humanists like to quote unquote disavow from that. But basically, their tradition is that, with religion, you have quote unquote barbarity and intolerance. And then meanwhile, they're just as intolerant. So they go out of their way to invade other nations and promote quote unquote tolerance and the liberalization from our quote-unquote oppressive religion. So basically, white Europeans or Western Europeans have just done the same thing that they did under Christianity. They just now wrap it in an atheistic bubble and bubble wrap or gift wrap, and then repackage it and then try and invade others. So,
yeah, Hussein couldn't be more wrong, actually. The monarchies of France and England were not secular humanist. In fact, the furthest from, they were feudalist and then monarchist, or sort of totalitarianism under a different name. And in fact, they had divine right to rule. So sort
I'm
of
talking about
describing
French and
Latin. Excuse me, Hussein. Talking about sort of that they're humanist in nature is completely incorrect. And this is what Robin means when she's talking about the straw man of sort of saying that any secular nation is suddenly a secular humanist nation. It's a straw man. I mean, they love to bandy it about. France and England have never been secular humanist nations ever.
You can respond if you want.
Is it my turn now? Okay, cool. So, the French elite did consider themselves, like, sorry, I hate to break it to you. And what I'm talking about is the Enlightenment era, Enlightenment thinkers. So like John Stuart Mill and those kind of people did use that. You have Simone de Beauvoir and Jean-Paul Sartre, and they're all basically, Jean-Paul Sartre specifically said he was a secular humanist as well. And they basically did justify, certain horrible actions. So as well as pedophilia and some other stuff, but whatever, it's besides the point.
All right. Our next super chat from Robin Webster, again, $5. Nordic countries in the top 25 safest and top 10 happiest low crime rates.
Yeah, that's up there. I mean, I'm not saying that there can't be happy nations, right? So I would like to see them polled when they're older, if they considered, a quote-unquote meaningless consumerist culture as happy. Obviously when they're younger and they're basically being fostered by the Western, empire, and they have, this social safety net because America basically takes care of their defense. They don't have to do any defense. They do everything through social safety nets. They have a good economy because they're not permit invaded like Muslim nations. Yeah, I wonder why they're happy, guys, and they have so much opportunity that they can, what world do you guys live in that you think it's a equivocal statement to be like, hey, Palestine's being currently bombed, has no control over their own economy, Saddam Hussein was like a brutal secular dictator installed by the US and then disposed. Like, how is this even fair compared to like some Dutch nation that was like raping and pillaging and then just like lived off their empire? Like, how is that even the same?
Okay, so we see a lot of the intellectual bankruptcy from Hussein here, because he's basically saying, hey, pay attention to the happiness index, pay attention to the the satisfaction scores in countries when it's in my favor. But when somebody points out, hey, there's these other countries that have not the same things that are actually happier, then the statistics are skewed, then the statistics don't apply. I'm just looking at the happiness rankings here, and yeah, places like Saudi Arabia are happy, but a lot of Middle Eastern countries are not. So this is sort of just trying to skew the statistics and ignore the statistics that prove him wrong. Suddenly then these other conflating factors that he wants to bring in for why they're, you know, skewed happy and the others aren't. So, you know, it's nice to know that the statistics when they support him are completely accurate. When they don't support him, well, they can't be trusted.
I never said that they're completely accurate or that I believe them all. I did say that, of course, those countries are going to be happy. I said, like, it would be nice if we had something that compared life satisfaction. Again, like, these words matter, right? So when you pull religious people, they have higher life satisfaction than liberal people, okay, for example, right? That's a stat. And that's what I'm saying. So that's at the end of the life, tail end, okay? And of course, like, people can be happy at different stages in life. Like, people can be happy at different, like, poverty levels or whatever, economic levels. So I'm not disagreeing. I'm sure it would be great to live in Denmark and Scandinavia and stuff.
All right. Thank you. Our next super chat comes from Bitter Truth with $5, who's saying, what is the reason of Muhammad attack Jew tribes soon he got in majority in Medina? Sorry if that didn't make sense.
Yeah, they're talking about a historical event where they had a treaty with the Jewish tribes of Medina, and then one of them broke the treaty. And so then they went to battle against the tribe that broke the treaty. There were still Jewish tribes after that, that these people who are Islamophobes conveniently like to ignore for some reason. It's the same guy, by the way, as last time, of course.
Well, I think sort of these questions are, you know, I mean, I get why sort of a nation in sort of the Arabian Peninsula circa 7th century would sort of take these actions. I'm not sort of using presentism to say, hey, they're wrong. But what I am saying is that these standards garnered from this book just cannot be applied to modern life. It works out incredibly terribly, as we've seen from all the statistics and all of the things that I've brought up. This medieval thinking, we have to draw away from it and come into the modern world, where we do have technology to take actions against people who transgress the law that don't include these barbaric punishments. I think it's time that we evolved a little beyond this horrible thinking, including the horrible thinking of thinking that we can create an empire throughout the entire world. I don't support that either. So I'm not sure why that's being particularly leveraged against me, to be honest with you.
No, I don't think you personally, Mark, believe that. So just to be fair. So.
Okay. So with that, we got just one more super chat left. But before I read that one real quick, I just want to thank you guys both for coming out and having this debate for all of us. It was really good, actually, and thought-provoking. Hussein, where can people find you on the internet any given day?
It's Hussein Polytheo. It's supposed to be like politics and philosophy, but I haven't
but it
really.
It sounds like polytheism. Yeah, that's.
I know. It sounds
unfortunate.
So there's some branding to be worked out there.
Yeah. So I also need to make some videos. So hopefully I'll do more with, like, I have some ideas and I want to do some with Issa, and I'd like to do more with Mark. So,
do you have any channels you're visiting soon, or you got any other debates elsewhere that you're going to be?
Nothing planned right now. I'm okay. In like the process of moving and stuff, like I said. So, it may be a bit, but it would be cool if we could do one on maybe I'll defend existentialism versus Mark.
Sure.
Well, with that, Mark, what do you got going on in your life and where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Mark Reid Atheism, R-E-I-D Atheism. And yeah, I've got also a gaming channel starting up with some Canadian guy called Beast of the Mark. If you want to, that's on my main channel. You can find a link to it if you want to see people play Baldur's Gate very, very, very badly. I've got a few things coming up. I've got Open Room on evolution coming up. If people want to ask questions, I'll have a few people on who are very knowledgeable about evolution and the evolutionary process. So if you're interested in that at all, come along to my channel. We'll be doing Open Rooms. Got a great community, really fun people, really cool people. It's absolutely fantastic. Looking forward. But thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it, even though, you know, Hussein and I disagree, but no, I don't have anything.
Well, what a lame debate it would have been if you guys were both here to agree. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, it would actually.
I found it actually quite good. Nice change of pace. And interesting. Definitely interesting. With that, let's get back to our final super chat here of the evening from Robin Webster. Again, another $5. 2017, U of Washington, 25-year study shows Islamic nations have higher rate of homicide, suicide, and mental health issues. Facts matter.
Wait. That is okay. I need to check that study out, but every study I've seen has said South Korea and Japan, which some of the two most like spiritually dead nations. Coupled obviously with like
if we pick apart the question, she claims they have a higher rates of homicide suicide, not the highest.
But higher in relative to what, like Scandinavia or Germany, where they're like all one,
can only extract
like
so
the
much
US, you know what I mean? Like that's because I mean again, this is my whole point with like statistics are very flawed like in general, and that's why I said when we get into imperialism, I mean, there was an empirical study that said people had intuitive disgust for like homosexuals, for example. I doubt people like Mark would be like, oh, all of a sudden, like, oh, because the study says that people naturally get disgusted by it. We need to, you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't think that, right? So that's why I'm saying like studies obviously like need to be looked into. So,
well, I have no comment on it. I think intuition is very poorly defined, and it kind of, I don't think it's in innate sense. I don't think we have innate sense judgments generally. I think that it is influenced by your cultural upbringing. So if you're raised in a culture that sees homosexuality as bad, you're going to have an intuition that says home. But I think if you're raised in a culture that says homosexuality is fine, I think you won't have that intuition. I think that intuition isn't just a sense that you're born with. I think it does, like a lot of things play into it. And yeah, there may be some things that are biologically rooted in the evolutionary process, like the intuition to recoil from rotten meat and things like that, sure. But I think there's other things which have been taught through a cultural mechanism that plays into intuition that we think is just an innate thing, but it's not.
Do you have any final words there about that, Hussein? Are you good?
I mean, so for example, like the one on bestiality and incest, like and cannibalism, those were like cross-cultural. And I think the one on homosexuality was as well. But I mean, I'm sure there is, you could argue, right, that people could be in a way, for lack of a better word, like groomed into like, you know, like culturally being okay with it. You know what I mean? Like if you feed it into them, like reflexively, they're not going to have a problem with it, I guess. Through like education and stuff. You know what I mean? So.
All right. Well, with that, hey, for modern day debate, this was a bite-sized discussion, but I think it's really good. And I'd like to have everyone here share and like and subscribe this particular debate to anyone who might be interested in discussing it more. And with that, thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming out.
Just quickly, sorry, sure. Justin, just quickly, there By is an means. After show on my channel.
Okay. Mark Reid Atheism, I believe. as I pretend so like
that,
I didn't know what it was.
After show, I'm doing that with Max, who I think you're familiar with. If you want, can you link it or maybe hand off to it? Is a good idea if you want. And you're welcome to come in, Hussein. We can continue the conversation if you want.
Yeah, I'll go pray and I'll come.
Oh, you have to pray. Yeah. Sorry, I do apologize.
It's fine. Don't even.
No worries. But so if you are interested in having more of a conversation and maybe a wrap up, more than happy to. More than happy to have you.
Cool. All right. And with that, we'll get to our closing screen. Thank you, everyone. See you next time on Modern Day Debate.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.